and the board upon a majority vote of a quorum of members may go into executive session containing legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-31-03-83 on any matter on the agenda. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with the exception of hearings. Ms. Sample, are there any requests for changes?
No, Madam Chair. However, well, that's not true. We will probably need to postpone the American, not postpone, but move the American University of Southern Sovereign Nations to 1 o'clock as Dr. Macer is in Korea, and that way it's 5 o'clock Korea time.
Okay.
AM,
right?
Mm-hmm.
5 AM?
Mm-hmm.
All right. The board may also, upon majority vote of quorum of members, may go into executive session or consider records exempt from law from the public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law. Going to ARS 38431-0382. Since this meeting is being recorded, I'll ask the board members and staff to introduce themselves for the record. Rachel Q.
Kevin Mountain. Keith Blanchard.
Dr. Jennifer Lack.
Craig Jacob.
Trish Leonard.
Jim Newton.
Paul Mittman.
Terry Stanfield.
Randy Schneider, returning to the board.
Thank you. And anyone on the board that on the phone, to let us know who's on.
For those of you who are on the phone, could you let us know who you are and for which agenda item, please? If we could start with
Denise's.
Okay, if we could start with the Art Institute.
This is Mario Nova for the Art Institute.
Anyone else, Mario?
I don't believe so.
Is Chris on?
No, he's not.
Okay. Cortiva?
We're here.
You are here, okay. TTY College?
I'm here for Paul Gardner from Center of Excellence in Higher Education. I'm on the phone for TTY.
Okay. UEI?
Here.
And we're on?
I don't know. I think I'm solo today.
You're solo?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Harris, we know that you are on. Dr. Pitt. Dr. Smallwood?
I'm here
for the
police office.
Okay. Will he be on my phone?
I
don't know. He's on my phone. Okay. I believe. And anyone on radio recording on the line?
No, but I'm here for them.
Okay. Is Joy? Going to be on the phone?
We can get her from here, but otherwise she's moving out of the radio.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, thank you.
All right. The audio recording of the August 24th, 2017 meeting has been posted on the website and is the official record of the meeting. Ms. Hinkle, have you confirmed that the minutes are posted in our office?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any questions? If not, may I please have a motion to approve the audio recording of the August 24th meeting?
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? the executive session minutes of the August 24th meeting have been provided to the board. Are there any questions for those who were present? If not, may I please have a motion to approve the minutes of the executive session for the August 24th meeting by someone who was there?
I move.
Do you have a motion? Do you have a second?
Second.
Motion second. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. All right. The first item on the agenda is the student tuition recovery claims filed by ITT Technical Institute.
Oh, sorry. Madam Chair, members of the State Board, submitted three strike claims for ITT Tech closure, which took place September 8, 2016. Ryan Christinger's claim, information submitted was $180. The claim for Chantel Taylor came out to $45, and then the only one that was an issue regarding the submission was a late submission by Emmett Larry Freedy in reference to $395, something we have to discuss regarding the statute of limitation of the 1 year. He stated he sent it to me in July. It was mailed out of some other county. We never got it that I could find in our system, but he submitted it, and I told him I would submit it to you for review.
Hey, can we first then have a vote on the two, which Josh didn't have any conflicts? Does anyone have any questions or concerns or discussion for
I would move that we comply with staff recommendations to refund Ryan Christinger $180 and Chantel Taylor $40.
Okay. Okay. We have a motion and second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. So on the case for Larry Freddy, it's a matter of whether we have the legal authorization to do this. So if you can ask for legal counsel weigh-in. The student believes that he sent it in on time. The board didn't receive it, but he otherwise would have been eligible, $395.
He didn't send it by certified mail or anything?
He did not.
Not required.
Right.
The statute requires 1 year limitation, but it's up to the board's discretion. I mean, there's really no way to prove on his side.
Have any other students contacted you and said that they had sent in and had not gotten to see them?
One, but he still hasn't sent me his information. So I have a drop dead date on January 1st regarding some of the information. We're waiting for some of the claimants, but they submitted everything prior to the September 8th cutoff date. He was real adamant about sending it. He's a Native American anyway, up north northern Arizona. So he just dropped it off at the post office box. He physically came in and gave it to me, and we discussed it, and I just told him, I guess it was Winslow, Arizona. And so we discussed it and said that I would submit to see if they would approve it. The rest of his loan was discharged by the Fed, so it's just this $395. Then it's the issue is how far past the statute of limitations do you go if other people start filing claims in the next 6 months?
Well, it's already, you know, late October, so we're almost 2 months past. So the one other student did not submit anything or just called us to you?
He just spoke to me. He said he emailed it to me, and I said, all I got to do is, then I said, I may have missed this, so just resend me the email. But I have not gotten anything in 3 months from him. So this is the only one that's really been submitted late that they actually sent or came in and dropped off his claim.
Any comments?
I just got a precedent, you know, that
it
shouldn't come through, but.
I agree, it sets a precedent, but I just think we have to deal with the precedents as they come to us. So I would favor taking his word for it, believing that he did send it.
I would too, especially if he drove all the way here from Winslow, Arizona. We're all going to have summer ahead of him.
And the fact that he did file for loan forgiveness, you know, tells you that he was at least aware of
he did that
time with.
Mm-hmm.
He
started that.
Yeah.
Any other questions? And then, like, motion.
I'll move that Larry Freddy be reimbursed for his $395 claim.
Second. Any further discussion? Good. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. And if anyone else joined the call since we called roll and would like to be noted,
we've walked in from Galvanized, Joanna Shea, Dan Bowles, and Gerald Fresh.
All right. The next item on the agenda is a status update from Arizona Senate Law School. So, please come forward. Ms. Antel, can you give us an update?
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the board. At your April 27, 2017 board meeting, the board considered the notice of the American Bar placing Arizona Senate on probation. After review and discussion, the board entered into a non-disciplinary consent agreement with the stipulations to close the surety bond of $2,973,600. The contingency teach-out plan provides student rosters monthly and electronically provide student records and provide the board a report quarterly. At that time, the board gave ALS they had 20 days to accept or reject, and they did request reconsideration, and at your May meeting, the board reconsidered the amount of the surety bond and agreed to $1,500,000. On June 14th, the consent agreement was signed. And on July 10th, Arizona Senate posted the 1.5 letter of credit with Chase Bank. And as required, we're providing the quarterly report to you.
Would you like to introduce yourself
for
the record?
Sure. Nicole Panton on behalf of Arizona Senate Law School.
Penny Lorridge, interim dean at Arizona Senate Law School.
Are you officially the dean or are you acting dean?
I am the interim dean.
Thank you for the opportunity to come before the board this morning. We sent in a written report on October 16th to provide the board with a synopsis of what has been happening. Since we've been placed on probation, the American Bar Association required certain things to occur through a remedial action plan. I believe that part of the submission that we sent to the board was a timeline that shows our absolute compliance with everything that the board, the American Bar Association is required to do. For example, we have to provide information on admissions methodology every semester when we admit to new students, so that has been timely complied with for every semester since we've been placed on probation. We have to provide, we had to provide the board with, or the Bar Association with a reliable plan to show how we will be coming in compliance with the standards. We provided that information to the board. We also developed what we call our reliable plan implementation chart and plan, which shows the methodically the actions that are being taken by the administration, the faculty, and staff at Arizona Summit to comply with the standards. We are required to provide notice to all of our students and anyone who applies to the law school with respect to the probation status and place that on the website. That has been done in every semester. At the beginning of the semester, we provide a notice to the students, a written notice individually to each student regarding the probation status and update on where we are. Our admissions department, when they are recruiting and when the admissions committee is accepting applications and notifying applicants that they have been accepted for admission, they also provide notice to them with respect to the American Bar Association status. We are required to report bar exam results whenever those bar exam results come out, both in the state of Arizona and any of our graduates who are taking the bar out of state. And so we've been providing that information as well. We most recently provided the Arizona July 2017 results, and as we are getting in results from other states across the country, and so as soon as we get all of those other states in, we will provide an updated information to the board as well as to the American Bar Association. In August of this past year, we had a site visit by fact finders from the American Bar Association. It was a two-day site visit in which they came and they looked at what we are doing in terms of our reliable plan, the curricular changes that we've made, the policy changes that we have made. The fact finders were not there to approve what we've done. They were basically ensuring that we were complying with what we told the American Bar Association that we were doing, and they found us in compliance with our reliable plan. We appeared before the Accreditation Committee of the American Bar Association in September. The purpose of the, that appearance was for, the again, the Accreditation Committee to review the outcome of our reliable plan and to make a representation to the or recommendation to the council. And then we have a council appearance next Saturday, November 4th, before the American Bar Association Council. So we are in compliance with everything that we have indicated to the American Bar Association, everything that we've indicated to the board with respect to our reliable plan and bringing bringing the school within the standards of the American Bar Association.
So in your report, you gave us the bar pass information through February, and the July ones have since come out, and they were not.
So you can characterize them as unimpressive. I would say that. I would say that. Yeah.
So do you have any update or?
Well, I think that what we're seeing is that there are a number of students cycling through the bar process program, the bar set process examination process, that have low indicators. They had low indicators when they started law school. And so it's going to take more time than one time for those folks to pass the bar. That's just that's historically what we know based upon the data that we have from our own students. One of the things that we did since I've become the interim dean is we raised the entering credentials for students. And so if you look back over the report that we provided, last fall, our entering credentials, they were pretty low. And so when you look at the interim credentials for this fall, it's about a 5-point increase in the 25th percentile. And so we believe that moving that those entering credentials up and moving them back to the level where they were when we had very, very high successful bar pass rates is going to get us back to those successful bar pass rates. And so that's one of the things that we have done to try to get those rates up. But law school is a 3-year process, and it's going to be 3 years before we see those increased performances from the students.
I think we've asked this before, so please remind me. You do attempt to keep track of who has and hasn't taken the bar, but it's self-reporting, so is what they tell you that. Do you get reports from the Arizona bar telling you which of your students? Or
from Arizona. We don't get them from every state. But we do get a report from Arizona. We actually keep track of it ourselves, but we know who's taking the bar in Arizona. Where we don't always know who's taking the bar out of state, but we definitely know who's taking the bar in Arizona. And then once we get the bar, once the state bar releases its press release with all of the names of those who passed, we can then check that against the folks that we knew who took the bar. And then the bar will, they haven't sent it to us yet, but in about a month or so, they will actually send us a list of all of the names of Arizona Summit graduates who took the bar in July 2017. So then we can double check our records against the bar and to show. So yes, we're keeping track of that.
And historically, the repeat graders rate has been low as well.
Historically, across the country, in any state, the repeat rate is low. I mean, if you don't pass the first or second time, the chances of passing are really statistically reduced. For example, in this last bar setting, I believe we had a repeater who passed the bar, but it was his sixth time taking the bar, but he finally passed the bar. One of the things that we are, Arizona has moved to what is called a uniform bar examination state. And what that means is that Arizona, along with approximately 25 other states, give the exact same bar exam in the state. And if the student or graduate passes in Arizona, they're then able to waive into up to 24, 25 other jurisdictions. Vice versa, if they pass in New Mexico, for example, which is a unique state, they can waive into Arizona. What we are finding, and statistically interesting, and the folks at the school are actually looking at this, is that we have had a track record, for example, of students going to New Mexico, taking the UBE and scoring off the chart on the bar exam, taking the same exam in Arizona and scoring far below the pass rate. Don't know what that, why that phenomenon is, but what is causing most of our students to do, I can tell you, I've talked to probably 20 students this week who are graduating in December who are planning to take the New Mexico bar because they just don't believe that they are being favorably treated or graded in Arizona.
So if they take it in New Mexico, they don't have to take it in Arizona.
They don't have to take it in Arizona. For example, we had a student who scored across, she took it the first time in Arizona, she scored a 272. You have to score a 273 in Arizona. She went to New Mexico, took the July bar and scored a 289. That you know, it's like, how can you score so high in one state and then not even, you're 1 point away in another state? That's very interesting to me. The other phenomenon that I've noticed personally, because I began to look at these statistics once I became an interim dean, is that historically we have seen students who have, who if you graduate from law school with a 2.75 or above, historically your bar pass rate on the first attempt has been very, very good, regardless of what your LSAT. So LSAT, your law school achievement test score, is not really determinative of whether or not you pass the bar. What we're finding is that that's really not holding true. In this last iteration of the bar, we had grade point averages all over the place. We had LSATs all over the place. LSATs as high as 153, LSATs as low as 137 passing the bar. And then there's a whole cadre of folks that are in the middle, that 146 to 150, none of them pass the bar. Very interesting. I don't know what that means statistically. I've got folks looking at it who can interpret statistics much better than me and provide me with some advice for that, because one of the things that we want to know is like, well, what's causing this anomaly and what is it that we can do on campus and with our students, particularly the graduates who are studying the bar, what can we do to help them and enhance their ability to pass the bar, given these anomalies that we're seeing. The other thing that, and I think I mentioned this in my report to the board, is that the statisticians identify what they have called the cohort effect. And the cohort effect is, I'm certainly describing it from my political science, history, liberal arts background, non-statistical background, so this is my understanding. The cohort effect is, if you have a group of students and there's high performers and low performers, the high performers tend to bring the low performers up because the low performers tend to increase and improve their performance because of the high performers providing that competition. One of the things that's happened to us, particularly in the last 5 years, is that a significant portion of our very high performers have transferred primarily to ASU. And once those high performers leave, then you have a cohort of marginal performers or middle of the road, top of the middle performers, but then you have the low performers. But you don't have the same level of competition that you have with the high performers. And therefore, the performance level drops. And so one of the things that our implementation team is doing is looking at a variety of things that we can do in the classroom to bring up not only the middle performers, but also the low performers because of that cohort effect. In our report to you, we identified a lot of factors that could contribute to the cohort effect. I really don't know which, if any, one particular factor of all of those factors contribute to
students not performing well on the bar, but we're really trying to look at that to see, and then to see what we can do and put in place to help our students.
How many high-performing students transferred after the March probation?
Let's see, I think the count was around 40 or so.
40, and what's your student population?
Right now it's 200, about 203 students.
Okay, and then I understand that, you know, with the higher entrance standards,
mm-hmm.
3 years, you'll see, it's going to take some time
right.
to see the results. Are you financially viable to make it to that 3 year?
That's my concern. I mean, the corporation that owns the school has certainly given me assurance of support for finances. I know that President Lively and others are actually in a fundraising campaign to get investors to invest more in the school. And one of the things that we've been talking about for probably the last year or so is converting to a not-for-profit and a university actually taking over the school. And so that's still in the pipeline. I believe there's a memorandum of understanding that's actually been signed, but it hasn't been publicly released yet. So those things are in the works in terms of financial viability.
My question goes back to a lot of the indicators you're talking about where you increase the initial indicators coming in, but I was actually shocked at the satisfactory academic progress GPA and the GPA to graduate, if I understood. Is that a 2.0? Am I reading that correctly to graduate?
So the minimum GPA is 2.2.
To graduate now?
Academically standing, 2.2.
So in most grad programs, it's typically a 3.0. And I was just curious if you guys are allowing, because of the GPA, allowing students to continue to go through a program that necessarily shouldn't.
Well, what you would see if you compare law school to law schools is that law schools and other graduate programs, their GPA levels are different. So, for example, when I went through my master's program, you know, you couldn't make anything under a B. When I went through my PhD program, pretty much you had to make A's almost all the way through. Law schools are not like that at all. So law schools generally operate on either a 3 or 4.0 grade point average, and then they will set a minimum level. Most law schools you'll find will have a 2.0 as the minimum good standing. We raised ours to a 2.2 for good standing.
So is that good standing and graduation, or just good standing?
Good standing and graduation, yes.
So the meeting out in Boston, November 2nd, 4th, at 7 o'clock, is that a reporting thing like this? What do you think it would be, like, action taken? What is that?
Well, I think the council is going to make a determination of whether or not we remain on probation and what other things that we will need to do. One of the things that we requested of the council and also, the committee and will also request of the council is that they find us in substantial compliance with the standards based upon all the things that we've put in place over the last 6-8 months, that they give us additional time to show one, student performance, both academically and student performance on the bar exam. We have a team of folks that are academic assessed and bar prep team that's working on developing special classes for students that are graduating in December that we know they're going to take the February bar. And we're hoping that by putting these special classes together and putting those students in those classes for bar prep, that will help. One of our academic success folks that we hired beginning of the fall is a writing expert, and so she's has over 25 years of writing experience. She was licensed in California. She sat for the July bar. She passed the July bar, so she's a recent bar taker for Arizona. She's a writing expert, and she's already making a difference with our students just in their classroom performance. So we're hoping that by developing these special classes that will include some intensive writing so that our students can really tackle and master the essay portion and the multi-state performance portion of the test,
that's going to help students perform on the bar exam for February.
So when people are in this prep, they graduate in December and they're in the prep class, obviously that's not a great deal of time in January and that part of February. So will this person or this team of people make recommendations to some of them that they perhaps should wait until
That's a possibility. So the bar prep class for those who actually are planning to take the bar in February actually started this month. It's already started. And so for students who are already who are still in school and who will be graduating, they actually are taking a course. Actually, there's three courses. One, they're pre-bar one, two, and three. Pre-bar one deals with the skills of taking a multiple choice exam, because one day of the bar exam is multiple choice. Pre-bar two is the skill of taking an essay exam, and pre-bar three is the skill of performing on a multi-state performance test. So the students who are enrolled must take those classes in order to graduate. So, but the bar program itself began in October, so that bar program includes not only students who will be graduating and have indicated that they will take the bar in February, but students who we know have graduated and they are intending to repeat the Arizona bar exam, or they may actually be going in some other state to take the bar exam, because everyone is a part of the bar program that desires to be that. So the bar prep program has already started, because our feeling is that from graduation in December, graduation is December 16th, until February 26th or 27th is really not enough time to study for the bar. It's about 10 weeks, and it's an awful lot of material to try to learn in 10 weeks, and so that's why we started the bar program in October. So our bar program is actively going on right now.
One more question. My understanding from lawyer and colleagues that there are some topics that are not necessarily emphasized in law school classes mm-hmm. that are on the mm-hmm. bar. Mm-hmm. So you have evaluated that. Did that alter what you're choosing mm-hmm. to suggest students take in school?
So there are what we call bar test-based courses and elective courses. And so our menu of courses in our curriculum includes all of them. Historically, at one time in Arizona Summit's life history, the bar tested courses were not required for students to take. So there are certain core courses in the first year always required, always tested on the bar. So every first year student takes those courses. Then when you get to your upper level courses, historically students had a menu of courses. So for example, there's business associations, secure transactions, commercial law, they're all sort of lumped in this area because it's dealing with one particular type of study of the law. Students could choose from a menu of courses. This is historically. What we found, I believe, last year was that students who were graduating having not taken the courses that were tested on the bar. They took courses from the menu in the area, but not specifically the courses that were tested on the bar. So the faculty in the spring, actually, of last year, voted and made all bar tested courses required. So now all Summit graduates have to take the bar tested courses. They can't choose from a menu. They can't pick and choose and not take something that we know is going to be tested on the bar.
Is that spring of 17 or spring of 16?
Spring of 17. Yes. Yes, and so now it's all are taking bar testing courses. The students who are graduating, for example, students who are graduating in December, we did an inventory to see how many of those students had not taken some of the bar tested courses. I believe we have about 55 students who will be first-time takers for the February bar. We located approximately 8 students who had not taken some of the bar tested courses. They had taken some of them, but not all of them. So what we have done, the Academic Success and Bar Prep Department have put together special workshops for those students to say, this is intense. You've got to learn the subject before you start really studying for the bar, because you need to know the subject area before you take a test on the subject area. So we're trying to rectify that for those students who have not taken those bar tests before. I mean, what we find is that if you leave students to their own devices, they won't take the things that they need to take. And so we had to make it mandatory for them to enroll in those classes.
I'm not familiar with all the actions that maybe I can take. What's the worst thing that could happen?
They could remove our accreditation. That's the worst thing.
Okay, and there must be some level other than that, other than probation. They have what they call, like, show cause in other accrediting bodies. They have show cause. They give you a period of time.
Right. There's a whole panoply of things that they can take. So the least action or sanction they could take would be like a reprimand or something like that, or a public censure. So let me just remind the board that last year when the board placed us on probation, it was after it placed Charlotte School of Law on probation. One of the reasons that I determined that Charlotte School of Law was placed on probation, because Charlotte School of Law initially was, the recommendation was for them to have a public censure. And public censure is a lesser sanction, and it basically says you need to come in compliance with these standards. We're going to be monitoring you, but you're not on probation. Probation is the next to the highest of removal of accreditation. Charlotte School of Law, their leadership didn't like being placed on probation, being given a public censure. So they appealed the decision of the bar, to the American Bar, to the council. The council didn't like the fact that they appealed. And so when they went to the council, they were pretty aggressive in their appeal to the council not to be placed, not to be given any sanction. And that's when the American Bar Association decided to place them on probation. Well, they got placed on probation, and a month later, we have to appear before the council. And I believe that the sanction of probation was a direct result of what Charlotte did, even though that certainly was not our attitude or our demeanor or behavior with respect to the American Bar Association. But I'm firmly convinced, after having served in this position for the last 8 or so months, that, or more than that actually, that's the reason why Arizona's coming in on probation. My staff, we've been working diligently to do whatever we can to comply with the standards. One of the things that is really sort of glaringly obvious to me is that the accreditation committee might say, well, you're not in compliance with standards because there's lack of rigor in the classroom. And so then when we ask, well, what does that mean? What does lack of rigor in the classroom mean? And we don't get any answer. And so we're sort of left to our own devices to try to figure out what the council means by when they say we're not complying with the standard. And so what you see in our reliable plan is really sort of a very comprehensive approach to looking at the standards and saying, this is what we think that we need to do to run a sound program of legal education, and that's essentially what we're doing right now.
Thank you.
Can you remind me real quick, are they looking at your first time pass rate or your total? Which one do they measure you on?
They look at both. They look at what's called the ultimate pass rate, mm-hmm. and that's your pass rate within the last 3 to 5 years. And then they look at the first time pass rate of your first time papers.
And is there's a minimum score, I assume?
A minimum for the ultimate pass rate is 75%. For the first time papers, there is no guidance in terms of how much you need to achieve. There's no guidance whatsoever. So, but for your ultimate bar pass rate, in the 3 to 5 year period that they look at, you have to have 75% of your graduates should have passed the bar.
So, just trying to do the math here.
Mm-hmm.
If your rates have been low for some time,
it's going to, that will continue to drag you down, even though the five-year bubble, that group is going to be there.
So what we're doing with respect to the five-year bubble is that many of our graduates, for example, they score high enough in Arizona to wave into another state. So we had probably 15 students who took the July bar exam that now can wave into one of the other jurisdictions that have a lower cutoff score. So, for example, I think I signed probably 6 or 7 petitions this week of students who are waving into New Mexico, because New Mexico's cutoff score is 260, Arizona's is 273. Alabama's is 260, Arizona's 273. So once those students wave into another jurisdiction and become a member of the bar in another jurisdiction, that counts in our ultimate bar pass score. So the ultimate bar pass score will go up based upon the overall number of the graduates who are becoming attorneys, not necessarily in Arizona, but all across the country.
Okay, just one more technical question. The first time, right, does that mean first time in any state or just first time in Arizona?
First time in Arizona.
So if they took it somewhere else and didn't pass, and then took it in Arizona, they would still show the first time.
Yes, in Arizona.
Can you remind me one last time, what is your ultimate now then, with the July in there, have you calculated?
We're about at 72% ultimate right now, but every day we are getting information of folks who are either waiting in, and we're still waiting on bar results from other jurisdictions. So, for example, Texas will come out sometime in November. We're still waiting for New York. I would think we're waiting for Washington, D.C. There's a number of states that we haven't gotten the bar results yet. Some don't come out until late November. So by the end of November, we should have every state in the country. One state we never get the bar results is California. We've written them letters and letters and letters, but California does not give any state its bar, the bar, who passes the bar in its state.
So then you're just getting them from the students in California, or are you getting them from the students?
Well, I mean, the students don't necessarily report. They just don't self-report. And The ABA will not allow us to rely only on self-reporting. We have to have actual documentation. And so in most jurisdictions, we get a letter from the jurisdiction. As soon as the bar results are released, they send a letter to the deans across the country, and they'll have our students listed as to who passed, who failed, that took it in the state. California just has never done that. And we write them every year requesting the information, sometimes we try to, what we'll do is we'll try to search the directory of attorneys in California to see if some of our graduates are members of California Bar and working in California, because that information is very important from a number of perspectives, not only bar pass rates, but also from employment perspectives, which we also have to report to the ABA. And so if we don't get that information, it's very hard to have accurate statistics. But we have a couple of folks who are really good at being private detectives and getting information.
So a number of years ago, you had high pass rates.
Oh,
now you've gone
yeah.
back. So when that bubble moves, so will those good rates fall out of the bottom. So do you think that by the time you're falling out of the bottom, your new rates will be high enough that you'll continue to go?
Well, I think so. I'm very hopeful. I'm very confident in what we're doing on Brown at the school, and I'm confident in the students that I see that we have admitted since the spring that have the higher entrance credentials. I'm hopeful based upon their performances in the classroom.
Anyone else have any questions for Mr. Thomas? All right, thank you for the updates. We will see you again in 3 months.
Okay.
And if you would, whatever results you get from that meeting in a couple of weeks, if you have some to.
All right, we'll continue to provide updates to you. And after we appear at the council meeting, we'll certainly provide an update to you as well.
Thank you. One of the quick housekeeping thing that Chris mentioned was, besides the fact that at 1 o'clock, whatever case we have finished with, we're going to attempt to accommodate someone who's calling in from those countries. But we also will test take about a 20-minute lunch recess somewhere there. So depending on how it goes, we'll either be before 1 o'clock or it will be after. We do that. All right, the next update is from the RDC.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At your August 2017 board meeting, the board approved the 2017 regular vocational and degree granting license renewal for the Art Institute of Phoenix by stipulated agreement, which I gave you a copy of that. As required by the agreement, AI Phoenix is required to provide to you a quarterly update. Mr. Novo did provide to you an update week or so ago. Since that time, I forwarded to you the press release regarding the change of ownership for the Art Institute of Phoenix through Dream Center Education Group, I believe. I think you'll remember somehow we were under, or at least staff was under the assumption that AI Phoenix had been realigned through AI Pittsburgh, who was going through accreditation, or this was a part of the plan for the change of ownership through Middle State, that AI Phoenix would be in that one. Because all the other AI Phoenix, Art Institutes that had been in Teach Out were aligned to Minneapolis. And they would be in the second wave, if that's what you want to call it. Instead, it's now in, it was obviously in this first purchase, which confused me, and so Ms. Shelley Murphy can explain to you what is going on with that. So that's the update.
When you give us the update, if you can, like, face some questions, if you also kind of explain with the Department of Ed and the OPID East Fall how you are doing that shuffle, so we can sort of figure out where. Here in the world, we are too
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, my title with Dream Center Educational Holdings is Chief Compliance Regulatory and Government Affairs Officer. So, I will be working with all the schools, RGC, South, and ARC, too. So, I may not have an answer to the OPID question for you today, or maybe Mario could jump in. I'm just giving really a sense of everything since we acquired just 2 weeks ago. but what I wanted to share with you, initially going back to Terry, the confusion, we complete change budget on November 30th with the Department of Education, and we were working with Middle State for the ACIC accreditation issue for AI. And a few other locations. The Board of Trustees approved a resolution of motion that we'll be moving ahead in working hand in hand with Department of Ed and expect to have AI Phoenix under WASP, and we expect to have that accreditation picked up as soon as December 30th. If it does not have to go to a full board meeting, if it goes to a full board meeting, that will be early February. And that was part of our arrangement with the trail. Do you have anything to add?
Do you have experience working with higher ed schools?
I do. My background is the former CEO for Arizona Higher Education Board, so I oversaw all the federal lending and I was for regulatory compliance for about 15 years. I was appointed under the Politano initially and again in the period. And our organization was still meeting because had the program not changed. About 20 years.
Good, so otherwise that would be a steep learning curve.
What's that?
Otherwise that would be a steep learning curve.
I feel like it's still kind of a learning curve. There's so much going on. But under the Dream Center, we're really excited. We're a non-profit organization. I think our mission is aligned great. We're very, very helpful and very positive as we can turn things around to a good direction. Because the leadership team is here in Arizona, we have a lot of through each of the buses here on the state specifically. Although we're working with all room 32 states.
May I ask how you're doing lost?
Like, what is the title to the Western versus HLC or in Arizona?
In working with the Department of Ed, and I don't have specifics to your question because this is literally a resolution that was just completed last night. But in working with the Department of Education, they felt lost was the most appropriate, and so we went under that direction.
It's usually not a choice, though. That's what I find interesting, because you have to be in that territory usually to connect to it. So I'm curious as to how that's working out.
And so the Department of Ed making a suggestion?
It was the Department of Education helping us to be able to keep these schools.
Now, the Center of Dream Center is in California.
In Los Angeles, yeah.
But they don't accredit, they wouldn't accredit the parent, they accredit the institution. So I don't get how this is working out, but for the record.
So have you reached out to the accreditor to ask if they would welcome you?
Yes, we have. We are in touch with WASC, and they are on board with our so we hope to have that done by December 30th, and we'll update you. And latest will be February.
We'll be interesting to see that.
There's a lot of interest, right? First time to go to nonprofits. So.
And the department is open to the nonprofit.
Yeah, we're extremely grateful for the Department of Ed support and all of their help.
There were some programs that increased enrollment, and so there were still a few students left at our last update. Do you have any updates on that?
Yes. I provided that information to Ms. Stanfield. We still have the same students. There's three students that were at the advertising program that remain, and they have graduation dates of winter 2018, and the two have graduation dates of summer 2018. We had one student that was in advertising that was very early on. I had 10 quarters to go. That individual did transfer to the graphic design program. However, that individual decided to drop out of school in the second quarter.
Well, we will be very interested to hear how all this goes in the show.
The next update should be good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to licensing. We're doing vocational program license renewal for Cortiva Institute. Was formerly Arizona School of Massage, and they are seeking renewal of the 2017 Veterinary Vocational Program license. During our review, staff had concerns regarding the financial position of the parent company, and therefore referred the renewal to the board for discussion and action. In December of 2016, staff had referred all of the SEG schools to the Finance Committee for review. That included Cortiva Institute, Scottsdale, Tucson, which are in the January cycle, and these two institutions who were in the October cycle. Due to timing, the Finance Committee scheduled and they were all reviewed at that time. At that meeting, the Finance Committee required a surety bond in the amount of $846,750 posted, but that quarterly reporting was not required. Cortiva, the other two in Scottsdale, Tucson are accredited by ACCSB and are on outcome reporting. Cortiva Institute, these institutions are accredited by ASSET, and in August of 2017, ASSET deferred accreditation pending additional report. Here representing the institution is Elizabeth Telfer and Mr. Rosen.
Yes.
Ms. Dantle, just quickly, the Cortiva Institute located in Scottsdale is also ASSET accredited?
and not want any sort of reporting for the agency.
Okay.
A lot of Workiva.
So there's four?
There's four Workiva, correct.
And which one is
so
assets got down?
This Tucson is ACCSC.
And assets, oh, so
and then the other is the major asset, yes. But the locations, the formerly known as Arizona Schools of Massage, are branches of the Utah College of Massage Therapy, whereas our location down in Tucson is a separate, well, Scottsdale is a separate school. They have their own OPE ID number. They're their own school. They're on their own renewal cycle.
We used to be in North Church.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I need to see it on paper.
Gotcha.
In that chart, if you would, for each school list, which is the main location for both accrediting and for the project.
Absolutely.
And
yep.
The OPID.
We can do that,
of course. All right. Both introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Hepler. I am with Steiner Education Group. I am the Director of Accreditation and State Licensure. And I just want to thank both Mr. Blanchard and Ms. Danville for being very helpful. We had to see the ladies in preparing this response because our accounting offices are located in South Florida. We were affected by the hurricane, and I do apologize that there was some confusion and some challenges there. We were closed for about 10 days, and we just had some delays in getting to, so I appreciate your patience.
Everybody have their power back?
We do. Yeah. We do.
Yeah. I'm Jeff Rosen, and I'm the corporate controller for SEG. And yes, I have my power back. It was us in the first quarter.
Did you have to sleep on your balcony?
No, no.
I've just heard of people sleeping in tents on their balconies because of the dark.
No, no. It was really dark. It could have been a lot of this. It was much worse. We were very lucky.
All right.
Thank you, Arnie. Okay. Would you like to share some comments and updates?
Sure. We do, as required by the Financial Review Committee, I guess it was back in December, we do have a bond, a copy of that bond that's submitted to the board as required. We are currently still recording with Asset. They have deferred our renewal of accreditation pending some completion of placement issues for schools not in the state of Arizona. One thing that I would like to share with the board is that for our most recently submitted Asset report, our completion and placement rates are looking really good. Our completion rate in 2017, as reported to ASSET, for our massage was 71. Our placement rate was 98.5%. In Phoenix, our massage evening program, our completion rate was 63, and our placement rate was 94. In Tempe, our completion rate was 75%. Our placement rate was 93%. Our massage evening, we had 64 and 76% placement. And our master body work, we had 100% completion and 83% placement. Those numbers are looking a lot better than 2016. We are still having some challenges with our financial condition. We are projected, and I guess I can let Jeff speak to this, to make money in the future.
Well, as a whole, next year, we sent you the financial projections. Like anything else, it's a 12-month program, so it takes time to run through the bad starts until we get a major focus on new starts as well as improving the customer experience and the student experience, and we're already starting to see some impact. We don't expect to be at a profit at the end of next year, although we will show, we do begin to show positive, actually, get in the music of multiple campuses. Yes, actually, we will show a profit next year. We'll show it can be about $500,000 profit, projecting to, and then our objective is to show almost $757,000 in the next year for
And one final point, we have changed our name. We have our company, Steiner Education Group, has 32 locations. We grew as a company through various acquisitions. One of the companies that we acquired several years ago for the Corteva Institute. So about a third of our schools nationwide are currently called Corteva Institute / State Name, City Name, whatever. We have decided to brand them all in a common way, which will allow us to sort of leverage purchasing, improve branding. We want to try to make the student experience throughout our system of schools as sort of just recognizable. It just has that common brand, a common name. So we're excited about it. Some new advertising, some new marketing. Corteva Institute. So that's why now all four of our Arizona schools will have the same.
So to what degree are the Steiner Holdings includes a lot of education, but also other industries?
Correct.
Right, like luxury.
So when you board a cruise ship and you go to the spa, those are owned, operated by Steiner Education Group at this time. There's some beauty products.
I'm just wondering to what degree are the educational holdings able to stand on them?
Well, it's a good question. We did operate as a deficit this year. We will bring a deficit next year. We're making quite a bit of investment right now with the rebranding effort. Next year, we expect to do all our campuses, and we're trying to keep things consistent. We've also made some significant investments in systems. So while we'll start just to turn around, and I'm talking about the Steiner Education Group as a whole, not just the four campuses, while we expect to begin to turn around towards the end of next year, we'll certainly be cash flow negative again next year. Right now, we're projecting to put another $5 million from our parent company, put another $5 million in growth next year. And then the year after that, we should be able to stand on our own. A lot of it is CapEx. It's not because we're not profitable, but
So, if I understand, so the parent company is a parent company to Steiner Education.
There's a parent.
Yes, that's correct.
And then there's Patterson, who's the private equity group that owns it all.
Okay. So Steiner Education Group lost $12 million in 15, less in 16, 2.7, and you're saying we'll have a loss this year, potentially next year. Mm-hmm. So I think, you posted a surety bond.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, as a board, our responsibility is to protect the students, primarily as a Arizona, but as a student in general, and then to also protect the state's funds. And so I guess with this burn rate and the investment of capital, even though it's CapEx, how much is there to, how far out can you go?
Well, we've got approval for, we're in the process right now of getting approval from a private equity partner.
For additional investment next year.
Right now it's $5 million. I can't speak to whether they're going to approve it. I don't know 100% one way or the other whether they'll approve it or not. They may approve some modification of that. But most of that investment, again, is CapEx. We expect, if you take out the CapEx out of the equation, EBITDA, we expect to be to start to show a profit by sometime around October next year. So as a whole, for the year 2018,
we're going to profit. Well, capital investment, not really.
I'm not talking about CapEx. I'm talking about we won't.
If you limit the CapEx.
Forget about the CapEx. Right? We're investing another $5 million in CapEx. But forgetting about that.
Right.
What I'm saying is we're still not going to. It takes time because we have to recognize the revenue over the entire life of the course. So it's taking time, even though we're starting to see our new starts improve, we're starting to see an improvement in our retention rates, and that's how we get paid, basically, mm-hmm. is new starts and retention rates. But we're still working through the old stuff, and we've got to work that. If we only have certain starts throughout the year. So So if we had a bad start last year in March, we could start in March. If we have a bad start in March, it's going to impact us for the entire year. So we need time to kind of move that stuff out. But we're seeing an increase every month it starts. And as Beth said, our starting to see improvement. But that's why we expect. That combined with some of the initiatives that we put in, we intend we'll cut through our costs too.
Okay. And in the financial improvement plan, you mentioned budgeting based on the past year's enrollment, so a more conservative budget. And so has that budget been adopted?
That budget would have cost us more. It was supposed to go before our board of directors, I believe it's November 2nd. So the budget might change a little. If anything, probably will have changed the CapEx and the SpendEx. Not so much.
I'll just point out to the board that, you know, that if they're, according to the summary, they're just very long for $840,000, which covers the campuses here in Arizona. From what I can discern, Tempe and Phoenix both operated at a profit this year, correct? Mm-hmm. Right. Last year, before you turned in 5,000, Tempe, Phoenix, 104,000. Mm-hmm. Tucson had a loss, 19,000. And Scottsdale had a positive, 58,000. Just to kind of give kind of an overview of how the schools are performing in Arizona. And so, in terms of the bond that we have, the exposure that we have with the schools that are in Arizona and their performance, it appears to me that there's adequate.
So you have a count of independently that you need to raise it to meet the math of the current numbers?
Well, I would say if we were raising it to meet the math of the current numbers, that would be fine.
But that discussion is that when you do the formula, it would be $938,700, which is an increase from the $840,700. I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm just about your default rates. They have stayed very consistently high. You have done a couple of appeals for the 12 and the 13, which brought them down, you know, incrementally, which anything is good. But it's staying around 20, which is not great. And when there are budget cuts and staff gets cut, I hope that the focus on the default management and what it takes for that isn't lost. And in my opinion, to help with the default rate is from the beginning from admissions all the way through to graduation and graduate support, in addition to whatever staff you have actually, you know, working on helping the students understand their loan obligations and what their options are. But an unhappy student is less likely to pay back. A student that drops out is less likely to pay back. Students who take out just too much, they get overwhelmed. So it's all aspects of the organization that contribute to the default rate. So Mr. Money Guy, when you're thinking of what all the cuts, keep in mind that your default rate has a very, very big impact on the overall health of the school. And honestly, it's a report card. Whether it's people agree with it or don't agree with it, it is what is used to rate and rank.
And hopefully our improved outcomes will help impact that.
In theory, they absolutely should.
In theory, they absolutely should.
And if you are monitoring them by campus, that, of course, will also help you see maybe some things that they're more successful than not, because they roll up, you know, under the Utah College of Massage Therapy. Any school under that rolls up into it, you could get, like, a false thought that things are going well or things are going poorly overall and really miss something that's spectacular and something that's stressful on the individual campus.
I would tell you the areas where we are cutting are, there's been a stress. We had a new president last year, and his mandate was to improve the customer experience, improve the student's experience. So in those areas, if anything, we've increased spending. We're cutting the stuff that's more on the back end of the student doesn't see, a lot of accounting and some more of the administrative stuff.
Well, shut back the threads on that. If you're not administratively capable, that would not be a good place to be.
No, 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 that would not be a good place to be. But I think we all agree with what you just said. If students are graduating and they're happy, they'll pay their loans back. That's where you have the problems, where you have unhappy students that aren't graduating. But they're graduating, they're getting jobs, they have the means to pay it back, they will. And in those areas, if anything, we are actually being dependent on the spending in that area.
And to help your GE, have them understand they actually have to.
I have a question regarding your ratios for faculty and administrators. So in Phoenix, according to the data you guys sent in, you have a 43-1 student to faculty ratio, and in Tempe, it's much lower at a 1-23. And your number of I've never seen really there are more administrators than faculty. But both of these have them. So like in Phoenix, it says you have 8, unless I'm completely wrong. You only have 8 faculty, but 17 administrators. How are 8 faculty teaching 339 students?
Something doesn't seem right. That doesn't sound right. I would need to go back and look at that number from our annual report, because we definitely have. Well, maybe it was 18, and this is where it cut off. I can double check it.
But even in Tempe, you have 13 faculty and 15 administrators.
That can be.
Yeah, there's something wrong
there.
Is there any shared administration that the same person does some function for all of the outside schools? Maybe they double count or something?
It's possible.
It's really, there should we have more faculty than we do staff. I don't know, maybe did I reverse the numbers? I'll definitely look, because that's something that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. You don't have any email?
No.
Dr. Mack, are you interested in making a motion?
Yeah, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the regular vocational program license and renewal application for the stipulation increase the surety bond to $938,700. And I wouldn't require quarterly approval.
We have a motion,
do
we have a second? Second. And a motion, second. Do
you
have any other
comments? Do you want to ask that it automatically comes to renewal for the first year for the next year?
Do you have a reportation? Does he add it to the motion? Okay, so you're adding to the motion that instead of losing the quarterly reporting, next year you have the pleasure of coming. And if you don't want to fly out here, you can call them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Stanthal, I will email you the extra documents.
Okay,
thank you. And do you agree with the stipulation to increase the bond? Okay. Is there any other comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
So opposed? Motion carried.
Hi, Liz. The next school for regular vocational program license renewal is TTY College.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the Board, TTY Career College is seeking renewal of the 2017 Regular Vocation Program License Renewal. During staff's review of the financials, it was noted that TTY had losses for 2 years, and so accordingly, the renewal is being referred to the Board for discussion and action. TTY College has been licensed by the Board since August 2005, and during that time, Mr. Smith was the co-owner. In November 2014, the Board approved the change of ownership application, and TTY College is now an LLC, a sole member of the Center for Excellence in Higher Education, CEHG. CEHG is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation in Indiana.
who also owns College America in Anderson Flagstaff and other institutions. Mr. Smith is with TTY, and Mr. Gerber, who I believe is on the phone.
Tom Gardner.
That's weird, I get that. Are the managers. In July of 2017, TTY Career College voluntarily withdrew as an accredited institution for ACCSC and is now, although they would hold a regular license, it would be a regular license as a non-accredited institution.
And our lead.
Okay. Thank you, sir, for being here.
Thank you.
Do you have an opening statement?
Not at this time.
Okay. Let's talk about that accreditation change. Why did you decide to voluntarily withdraw from accreditation?
You know, the administrative burdens of accreditation for us as a small school far outweighed any other benefits. So, you know, in the case of we're not Title IV financial, so we wouldn't be able to tap into those funding sources. So we just made the decision that the burdens of staying accredited really did not lend well for our operations and our goals.
Okay.
We have short-term programs, they're certification prep, they're 1 month or 2 months in length, and therefore it just made sense for us to voluntarily withdraw accreditation.
Cash programs primarily?
Yeah, cash. We do workforce grants. We're approved for the veterans as well, so you know, large percentage of our students are fully funded by outside sources like workforce and the veterans, 9/11 veterans.
I have one question on that.
Yes, go ahead.
It's a lot of work to become accredited, and you went so far, and then you got a letter from them saying they wanted more with this. I guess I'm wondering whether it was your concern about being able to meet those requirements, or you just got overwhelmed with it, which was part of the problem.
I would say the latter, yeah. Overwhelmed in regards to, although accreditation is great with all the different areas, you put all that in compilation on a small school when we really weren't getting any benefits from it that we perceived, it just became apparent that this was best for us to not be right.
So you didn't find from a marketing perspective having accreditation wasn't helping you be more successful?
We didn't see that was the case. I think that the students that we're going after are the ones that are interested in IT certifications, not so much a degree or accreditation. So I can't say all the students didn't care about it, but since we notified all of our students and we haven't been accredited the last months, we really have not seen anybody saying, well, I'm not coming to your school because you're not accredited. I've not seen that.
Well, let's talk about this improvement plan for financial stability. I'd like an update on these different areas of where you are at currently as far as residential expansion, online class expansion, admissions training, and so
sure.
forth.
The network for the last 8 weeks has been approved by state board. But this is the number one category. We are security plus. We already have as an approved program, but it's going to a new certification. So we're developing for the new test, the 501. MTA security is under development at this time too. We have subject matter experts doing that, and then customer service is just beginning its development for the on-ground residential programs.
Okay.
The online class expansion. We are formalizing the best model to do that with our certified ESCO hacker. And then the PMP, which is a new edition, which is the sixth edition. So usually in the certification world, it's about every 3 years, they change the requirements, they change the test, so we have to move along with that. But we have the PMP fifth edition approved at this time, so it's a matter of just going to the new edition. Admissions training, again, that's really training our admissions team to do a good job of increasing our starts with our systems and our different approaches. I'm not sure if the board knows, but we do have another brand called Training to You, and that brand caters to corporations and large government agencies. So this second page is more a sales improvement plan for the B2B division that we have. I'm happy to go through that with you if you feel like that's relevant.
Just an update on where where you're at with these action items.
Yeah, let's see. The website is, we have signed the contract on that and going through that as of a week or two. So that's moving forward. We're also formalizing the best model. We were able to get a GSA contract award to offer our B2B classes to federal agencies now. So we were able to increase our sales in that market by 30,000 this year. Looking to do, you know, double or triple that next year. It is a 5-year contract for GSA. So that's promising. And then again, more on the sales training for our business-to-business representatives there on, the, and on our systems and our approaches. Classroom rental facility, we also have a revenue stream where we rent our computer classrooms to corporations and agencies that want that. With the signing of our new lease earlier this year, we have a $50,000 tenant improvement allowance so we can upgrade the facility the way we see fit. We're undergoing that plan right now.
Okay. When you notified your current students of a withdrawal from the accreditation, was there any, did you see any adverse effects to students? Were there concerns from students?
We did not see any, and it's probably because we have the 1-month mod, the 2-month mod.
Right.
They're not here for a year like a degree or 2-year degree program. So we notified them. There really was no, I would say, negative backlash. They were there to get certified, and so we did not really see that. We were surprised. We were expecting to see some that were going to have a problem with that, but we really didn't see much.
Okay, and then how are enrollments doing from June of this year to present?
June to present, I would say it's a marginal increase from the second half of the year, from the first half of the year, marginal increase.
You moved accreditation from all of your publications and website.
Yeah, that's part of the standards that within 30 days you have to have it all off, and so we combed all of our marketing and whatever, so shouldn't have a .edu anywhere that we're put up this month.
And you should just sometimes. Things need to be done, they aren't necessarily, or something gets refreshed and it pops back up again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what number of population is your break even?
Well, from the school side of things, if we were to get to probably about 180 students annually,
okay.
That does it for us.
Okay.
Anyone else have any questions?
Most of mine were answered, but I did have kind of alarmed by your cash position.
Yeah,
very much cash. Just wondering if you could speak to that.
Yeah, you know,
concerned at all?
Well, if you see the letter that is written from our CFO, our parent company, they are the ones that are supporting us. So if you'd like to address that, it's probably a better situation for Paul Gardner, who's on the call.
Hello, Paul.
Did
you hear my question?
Yes, I did. Yeah, so, you know, overall, as an organization, CEHE, we have four groups, of which TTY is a part one. And we're overall doing very, very well. Well, TTY has struggled a little bit and trying to get over that hump and start to get back to profitability. We're fully supportive of them. And we're, as an organization, and overall in a very strong cash position.
Okay, so the parent is perfectly willing to contribute whatever cash is necessary to resolve any issues with regard to current liabilities at TTY.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
There's a letter stated in CAP 4 to that effect from Paul Gardner.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Gardner, can you also talk about the IRS audits?
I have no update at this point. They're still going through that process. I don't anticipate any significant liabilities to our organization. There may be some liabilities to the former owner.
Okay.
Who is the former owner?
Carl Barney.
Okay. He owned most of them solely. And that's when he then, not a donation, but it was a very unusual change of ownership, if I recall.
what was a very typical change of ownership from a for-profit organization going to a non-profit organization. In fact, it mirrored several typical transactions that happened in prior years. So, and the IRS recognizes this as a non-profit organization.
Can I ask a quick question? On the an application form, it lists as a TTY as a for-profit.
Correct.
And yet the for-profit is owned by a parent corporation, which is a not-for-profit.
Correct.
How does that work?
TTY LLC is the owning organization of TTY. CEHE, the nonprofit, owns 51% of that organization. Trinity Inc. owns 49%, which is why. But TTY LLC is for profit, but it's a subsidiary of CEHE because they own 51%.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm looking at TTY. I think that that's the school that we're looking at here in Arizona. Could you explain, in looking at your income statement,
this
was December 31st, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Your advertising and your admissions exceeds your tuition and almost your tuition and corporate sales. That's almost extraordinary to me. I'm just wondering how or why is that the case, especially given, like you said, the nature of the programs that you offer, high interest in the general population, with access to veterans, where GI Bill essentially paying for their education. It just seems like an extraordinary amount of money from the advertising mission.
I think with our corporate, director of marketing there, we tried a lot of campaigns. We tried radio, we tried direct mail, we tried a lot of things that cost quite a bit of money to try to generate the revenue. And I think we've since learned that really the traditional marketing for our types of programs hasn't worked that well. It's more of a relationship type model that we've gone after, where we have workforce counselors that may refer us students, veteran voc rehab counselors that may new tribal governments. So we will be spending a bit less on advertising in future years. But we have tried different campaigns, and we tried a big radio campaign back this year in January. So we still have a little high there, but we're looking to tighten that up and use the methods that work for us.
Okay. Right. And the admissions? Yeah, $476,000 in admissions.
Yeah, the admissions, what's also
in
total
revenue of $963,000.
It's a
substantial amount, and you only have 7 administrators.
I guess the admissions cost is also locked in there with our parent company. It's all of the sales people for our DVE division is also located into admissions, because it's just where they slot it with the financials. So the DVE division of sales personnel is also involved with that in the admissions category.
Okay. I have a few questions. Just kind of fascinating. On the parent company, in your audit, there's a number of things that I'd love to understand. Could you explain? There's a couple of revenue lines for morality of capitalism, $1.3 million and $2.8
special categories on page 18 of the audit. So 1.3 for 2016, and then $2.8 million in 2015.
Those are contributions of the grants that we made to other nonprofit organizations.
Okay. Okay. And then in the notes, there's some really big letters of credit.
Those are for the state of Colorado.
And have they expired, and were they paid off?
They've all been renewed, most of them at lower amounts because they're based on student population.
Okay. So they're still on the books.
They are still on the books, correct.
Okay. And then the promissory notes in the balance sheet on page 3 of, let's see, I believe $67 million and $77 million.
Yeah, so for the most recent year, 2016, you'll see a long-term portion of $67.1 million and a short-term portion of $7.9 million, totaling $75 million. That $75 million is debt that we owe as a part of the nonprofit transaction. In that transaction, the former owner donated half the value of the companies to the nonprofit, and then the nonprofit purchased the other half. And those notes are contingent notes based upon our cash collections and our ability to pay those notes. So they're, while we segregated into a current portion of 7.9, up to this point we've not paid any of that debt yet this year, and won't be due unless at the end of the year we have available cash to make some payments on that debt.
And the note holder has no affiliation with the school anymore.
The note holder is actually the chairman of the organization that oversees CEHE. But it's been an arm's length transaction, and he set it up specifically so that the organization would continue on long after he is gone, and with the provision that if there was available cash to make payments on those notes, we would make such payments. Otherwise, they would just continue indefinitely. There's no term date on those notes.
And the current portion is, I guess, variable depending on how well the nonprofit performs.
Correct. At the end of each year, we make an estimate based on our budget for the next year of what we anticipate we'll make a payment on, and then we'll include that in the current portion just to make that allocation. But there's no specific requirement to make that payment.
Good deal.
It's an excellent, yeah, it's an excellent deal.
Okay. And I guess the last thing is, our lead on this already asked you about the financial performance improvement plan. It just seems that everything is very significant increases. Like almost, for TTY, a program that lost about 60% more than they brought in. To expect, do you realistically expect all of these to hit where you're going to increase sales?
We are going to
try hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, we all work out and do that. We got the new contracts for the B2B and going online with more opportunities. That's our intent.
Any other questions?
All right, I'll make a motion to approve the regular vocational program license renewal application, the TTY, with the stipulation to increase the surety bond to $45,514. I think they still need to be on quarterly reporting.
They have not.
Or?
Quarterly reporting had not been.
Oh,
had not. Had not in the past. So,
I would like to see one or two cycles of quarterly reporting, see how they're doing with their improvement plan.
At the school level.
And at the school level and the population.
So perhaps 4 years on this renewal?
Yes.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second.
Can I just ask a quick question about that? So is the quarterly reporting, is there a number or a basis for that request? Is it, what's the basis for that?
Just based on the concern we have on the financial health of the institution here in Arizona.
2 year law.
It's the school itself that we're licensing. We're not licensing the
parent company.
Yeah.
For the parent.
Yeah, with a parent. No grandparents.
That's new.
And so, since we are here to protect the students of the school, and the school is currently losing money, it's in our interest to see if you want to turn the school around on its own. We understand that takes a while to shift it, turning around, and perhaps you won't continue to spend as much money on marketing and admissions more than you did. But having a quarterly review as a health check.
Do you agree with the stipulation?
Yeah, I agree.
All right, we have a motion second. All those in favor say aye.
All right.
All right, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Will recuse himself from the board for this next topic of review, which is the regular vocational program license renewal for UEI College.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At your October 2016 meeting, the State Board reviewed the renewal of the 2016 Letter of Vocational Regulatory Degree Granting License Renewal, Complaint Number 16, NS-509, and the ACICS Compliance Letter for UEI. The State Board approved the 2016 renewal of placed UEI on non-disciplinary probation. Through the consent agreement, UEI agreed to the probation, increased the surety bond from up to 170 from 120 to continue quarterly reporting and other requirements. A copy of the agreement was provided to you. In December, we received the $170,000 surety bond. The June 30th quarterly reports for both Phoenix and IEC have been provided to you. In the past, we used to have. And I understand that in the past, there were separate balance sheets for the campuses that no longer
right.
Is that correct?
You should have separate.
Well, maybe I misunderstood, Angela. But anyway.
She might be on the line now.
Angela, are you on the phone?
I thought I had asked her because in the past we always had separate.
I'd be happy to provide those.
And she, I thought that changed so.
Mr. Dugan,
I've forgotten that all day.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. I became the campus president of this
institution in late March. A little bit of a turnaround situation. The goal was to create vision, culture, and structure at this campus. 6 months now into it, we've gone a long way. I've established a very good leadership team. Our overall student population has increased 20%. We've achieved our new enrollment goals for the past 7 months in a row, which this campus had never done. We've built and restructured two HVAC labs and a computer network lab. So I think, you know, the big thing is that this campus now has a vision of where we want to go, and that is, you know, preparing our students so that they are able to get jobs in their careers, in their fields, without any issues. And that the structure's in place now, both for staff and for students. That wasn't there before. We did go through some challenges in my early part of the tenure with, you know, some staff members or some students not wanting to abide by some policies and rules that needed to be in place, like wearing pants instead of shorts. And, you know, so those things are in place now. And we have an excellent structure, and we just had an asset visit 2 weeks ago. We had 8 strengths, which is more than established UEI 8 asset campuses. This was our initial visit with asset, so that was more than some established UEI campuses received. 6 weaknesses, 3 of them were more of institutional issues, such as percentage of homework given out, outside hours, a little vagueness on MAT, still by lesson plans. The 3 of them were in-house for us, and they were, we needed to add an additional career services person. We had just had someone leave the week before the visit. And then completion and placement rates were a big issue. We are with ACICS, and we're moving to ACID because of the ACICS issues. And we were missing on retention and different placement standards, which we were doing well with ACICS, but not under asset standards. So we have some work to do there with getting our placements and completions up to where they need to be. But overall, I'm very pleased with the progress that this campus is making. From a financial stability standpoint, we lost only $40,000 last month. That's a big difference from the $1.4 million they lost last year. And we are at about 269 students right now. We are at the point where between 280 and 300 is the breaking point. Very excited about that.
And give me an idea of what the next year looks like.
Next year looks like, based on my projections and where we're coming from, that looks like a profit of about $300,000, 6%, so 6%. Well over the break-even point for students, going above the 300 student mark.
Thank you. I'll make a few comments that I noted. I had a review of the package that you submitted. Most of them, or many of them, in addition to your local campus, I noticed some significant improvement at the corporate level as well. The current ratio for the entire organization was good, better than one, good cash position, I noted that. At the corporate level as well, I point out to the board that there was a significant improvement in the cash position because there were some letters of credit in the amount of $481,000 in favor of the Department of Ed that was released. And so that really made a favorable impact on the cash position, because essentially the cash got credited back or got impacted by that letter of credit and which was dismissed. So that was a significant change from my point of view and the overall health of the organization. I noted that when we met in March, and I think this was probably at the point where you took over approximately, you were at 100. You ended 182 students versus the previous year of 102, so there was already some improvement, but now, as you say, close to the 260 mark, is that what you say?
Yes.
260. athletes. So that's a nice improvement over the 182 from only 7 months ago. So I noticed that. In the independent accountant's report for Florida Career College, which is also part of the larger corporation, I noticed that they were very favorable report from the auditors, so congratulations on that. And finally, I noticed your improvement plan, your management plan for the local campus to improve financial stability. It looks like you're on track to achieve most of those 5 objectives, so congratulations. And finally, on the very last page, your 2-year projections, you're showing student starts of 489 compared to last year, 314, and the following year, in 2018, you're forecasting 611, so you're showing a significant improvement.
And we're on track.
And you're on track to achieve that. Congratulations on all the improvement that you've had in the last few months, and I hope to see you continue to go forward.
Robert, still to do.
Is this campus under the OPID and Huntington Park? Or?
It will be.
It will be.
Under asset. So then that's another transition we'll do as far as changing our programs to match the asset programs that all the California schools honor. For instance, we have medical assisting technician. We'll be switching to a medical assisting degree program to fund it. So that's the next program next year.
So you'll be moving which school you're under, both for asset and department of ed?
Correct.
But I noticed in your the default rates reported were staying around 20% of the prior and under, but the school and Huntington Beach are schools. Or rolled up to it, they have a huge decrease from FY13 core default rate to 14, a decrease from 25 to 17, which is phenomenal. But there was also a huge drop in overall enrollment figures from the 12 year to the 13 year to the 14 year. So the default is saying you're not going to be doing them a favor by being under them.
That's true.
So is that something you're investing in?
Yeah, we have a very good collections process in place, a very good director of student finance who's diligent on, and the team working on with our students to talk about their financial management and budgeting. And we have a tuition options plan. The students are very good at making their payments, very low payments, $40 a month. So, and then the goal is to keep these students in school. We had a large number of drops in my first 3 months when I'm instituting policies and procedures.
Yeah,
like pants, and like showing up in school and getting marked down for attendance, things like that. And so,
okay.
Yeah. Well, when you work with, you know, HVAC and sharp metal, you have to have something covering your leg. So, and so those are, you know, we're working hard to get those students back in here to say, listen, you didn't need to finish school. This is why you came here.
Yeah. I would follow my standards if I were you. I think that's important.
Yeah.
And Ross, have any questions?
I mean, Mrs., is there a required retention and placement percentage?
For asset, it's 67% completion rate and 70% completion rate. Right now, we're at 43% completion rate and 53% placement rate. So.
I'm sorry, what was the paper completion?
67%.
Yes, asset.
Any other questions?
I'll make a motion that we approve the regular vocational program license for UEI and as suggested. suggested by staff to remove them from probation, given the progress. There's an option, and I'll leave this to my colleagues here to discuss, but I don't know whether we should increase the bond to 277 from the current 272 from the current 170. That's better than a 50% increase or not. Given the progress, I would suggest that that's not necessary, but I'll listen to staff. Or I'll listen to my colleagues.
Not quarterly.
No.
Right. Remove
quarterly report, please. That would be a problem.
I think we've been consistent in the way that we've done them, so it's not as hard.
I mean, I would say given the trajectory and the recruitment, there's a lot of comfort in that. On the other hand, Dr. Lexington,
we're going to be consistent with all of our, schools. All right. I'll include that in my motion. So increase the bond to the 270-288 as recommended by staff.
And remove.
From
probation. And quarterly.
And quarterly.
So the motion is for us is to remove the probation, grant them the license, remove them from quarterly reporting, and increase the bond to 272.78. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Yeah, second.
I agree to the
input. Thank you. With your long cap.
Yes.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Thank you for coming before. Please, Matt.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is being postponed until 1 o'clock, so we will go over to Merritt Business School.
Yes, Madam Chair. Merritt Business School, formerly Second Academy at Fashion, has been licensed by the board since September 2012 as a non-accredited degree granting institution. The board approved the change of ownership and change in name at its meeting in February 2016. Because of the change of ownership, which at that point in time they were seeking accreditation with the EAC, they had to begin the process all over again. And it is now expected that Merritt will begin again in, or eligible to begin in the second quarter of 2018. They are seeking renewal of the 2017 provisional security granting license, and the committee, finance committee, met and recommends that the institution maintain the $45,000 surety bond and to continue quarterly reporting. Your board member lead is Dr. Mittman, and I believe Mr. Harris is on the phone.
Is anyone here?
Yeah.
I don't see Magdalena. Magdalene is not here, correct? No, either.
No, she's not on the line.
Mr. Harris or Dr. Harris? I'm just looking at your...
It's Mr. Harris.
It's okay.
Hi,
Mr. Harris. Do you want to start with an opening statement?
Sure. Thank you very much. Merritt continues to make progress. We are working with DEAC, an online national accreditor, and I have been certified with that, and Dr. McGrain has also been certified to work with an accrediting agency going forward. And as mentioned, we expect to begin that process next year. In advance of that, we've been continuing working with our current students, primarily an international-based business school student base, from Eastern Europe, from the Philippines, from other parts of Asia, and North America. We've been doing extended outreach in terms of marketing, and we currently have about a half dozen students, three enrolled, And our goal really is to continue to expand our marketing, bring in new applicants, and that's our focus in advance of DEAC accreditation. We're also looking at partnerships internationally with One Group ASIC UK. We've been meeting with different groups and, again, trying to increase the flow of applicants, which, again, we think is critical to grow the school space. We believe the curriculum is sound for a business school. The student reviews are sound, been very positive. We graduated 3 students this year. We are slightly profitable, although as we grow, I'm sure we're going to want to reinvest that through additional marketing. We're at such a small base now, but we feel good about it. We have a small faculty base, again, positive student reviews, and again, we're looking forward to a large accreditation process starting next year.
Great, thanks. In your the materials that you provided us, you were anticipating accreditation of the DEAC by the end of this year. Are you still on track for that?
I believe that would be the earliest legally because of the ownership changes. There were also some additional curriculum changes that were just part of the change in ownership, which we expect to delay it somewhat. So I think Terry's overview is correct. Probably at the beginning of the second quarter, and we're going to start the process starting the first quarter, make sure we start finding materials for outcomes of customer life, and just start the process. But we believe it's probably mid-2018.
Okay. I'm looking just randomly through the course catalog, and I was looking at page 33, for example.
And what's my question is, who teaches all these courses?
Well, this is part of the lower curriculum, and so some of these courses are not in content.
Okay. But for the students who are enrolled, let's say in the MBA, right? So can you just kind of point me to a program that's already underway where you have students enrolled? Just, you know, point me to a curriculum there. And I guess my question still is, who teaches those courses?
Our current faculty is split between about 5 faculty members, and most of it is geared towards the core curriculum, and which I've even taught as well. So most of the, it just depends on the math. Some of the electives are there, but as I mentioned, they haven't been taught the core curriculum. Other students do,
Hello? Ooh. Mr. Harris? Is anyone else up on the line so we can verify our line's okay? Hello? Says it's connected.
I think Dr. Newton has a really good point about the number of electives within our population is so small.
Right.
And putting it in the catalog makes it look like that it's already available. So if they're not able to teach all those and offer those, I think they should hold them until they're...
Hello?
What happens if they can't offer it?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, who's this?
This is Tom Harris from Merritt Business School.
Oh, did we lose you or did you lose us?
I'm not sure.
I can't hear it.
Okay. Okay. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I was asking about the number of courses that are represented in the catalog, and it looks very robust. And Dr. Leck just pointed out that, you know, to the prospective student, it looks like a full complement of course offerings that may or may not be actually in existence or available at this time.
To some degree, that's accurate. With a small student population, we try to pull together courses based on